Off the ball.
Rugby.
It feels like a summer tour, really, you know, and I think it's exciting to have a competition, and we certainly want to be, you know, at the business end of it come November, but it feels like a tour. And
join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Saturday panel on Off the Ball
with Lynx, a proud sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 2026.
This is News Talk.
This is Off the Ball Saturday. John Duggan with you here on News Talk 2 to 5 o'clock. So the Saturday panel on Off the Ball this week brought to you by Lynx, a proud sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 2026. Smell your best when you look your worst. Just the one guest today, delighted to have the former Republic of Ireland international and Premier League midfielder David Myler with us over the next hour or so to chat about the greatest show on earth. How are you doing, David?
I'm good, JD. How are you?
Yeah, great, David. Are you loving this World Cup? A good World Cup or a great World Cup for David Myler?
So far, a very good World Cup. I'll go in between. I've really enjoyed watching all the games. The big players have come to town, whether it be Messi, Mbappe, even Ronaldo. I know there was the hiccup in the first couple of games, but scoring goals now in the later stages. And even when he got taken off, I didn't think he sulked much. Then you look at Vinicius with Brazil performing, Harry Kane with England. So all the big countries have got their big players turning up. So no, it's been really good. I've really enjoyed it.
Last year, you're preparing Cork City for an FAI Cup final, and you get there and you have a good day with Shamrock Rovers. Unfortunately, the result is not what you wanted, but the captain of Shamrock Rovers is Pico Lopez, and then last night he's playing against Lionel Messi. This is like something out of Disneyland.
It is, and there's been a lot of coverage of it and how it's all kind of transpired and how he got into the Cape Verde, you know, squad, obviously, with that whole message on LinkedIn. But it's been a wonderful story. You look at the four games he's played in. His performance has been terrific. He's been a massive part of that squad. And for such a small country, it is amazing what a country can do or a team can do when there's belief. Everyone's pulling in the same direction, no egos. And they've taken the world by storm. And they should be really proud of themselves. And I know you touched on Pico there. Like, what a story. Like, even I saw one interview this morning that he did after the game where they said 10 years ago you were a mortgage advisor, and he nearly broke down crying to think of how far he's come. Obviously, he's had huge success with Shamrock Rovers. I wish he'd lost that cup final in November. But no, it's remarkable. And he should be proud of himself, his family, even his, you know, fellow teammates who've been, you know, been encouraging and pushing him the entire way. It's a tremendous story.
If Pico Lopez from the League of Ireland can perform on the international stage and do well and play at four World Cup games, does it say more about maybe that we could be given more League of Ireland players a shot at international level with our team?
That's a difficult question, JD. Simply because you've got to earn your spot.
Yeah.
Like that's the part. And naturally, lads who are playing in the Premier League Championship will be seen as playing at a higher level than the League of Ireland. We did see it there towards the back end of the season. Obviously, Conor Brown from Cork City, Ed McGinty, Dawson Devoy, Adam Brennan, they all got opportunities to go and train and play with Ireland. Obviously, Dawson ended up making his debut against Canada. I know the boys came on late, but, you know, certainly your first start. There is an opportunity, but it comes down to the players themselves. If they're performing at a high level and you're doing enough to, you know, that when squad selection comes, that you're putting your name in the manager's mouth saying, like, I can't afford to leave this fellow out. There's been a lot of talk, say, with England and players being left out, and have those players done enough? And that's what it comes down to. You've got to make the decision for the manager, you know, throughout your own performances.
When I'm looking at certain teams, like Turkey didn't get out of the group. Czechia, sadly, like, were awful from our perspective. But then you look at Cape Verde.
It nearly hurts worse than it.
It does. It's still painful, to be honest. And then you look at Cape Verde, and how do they exceed expectations in the tournament? What's so special about them?
Ooh. Like everyone goes to every competition with the expectation to try and get out of the group. Like the thing with Cape Verde, you look at it to like all... Well, technically four draws across 490 minutes, but in their group, three draws. Their performance against Uruguay and Spain was, you know, incredible. And then I know you touched on other nations there. I don't know. Sometimes it's a step too far for these countries. and you go with the game plan of doing certain things, and then changes happen, and then it just doesn't work out. Like, you look at it, obviously we were, you know, terribly disappointed as a nation to lose to Czechia, and then what ends up forthcoming after that, like, disappointing. Would we have done better? Who knows? But it's a tough one.
Messi then in the first goal there, that's just once again in sensational stuff. Like, he scored in 7 World Cup games in a row now, 7 goals in this World Cup. When you look at the genius, can you understand the genius as a former footballer, David, or are you still at awe? Are you still like, is your breath still taken away at times?
He just takes my breath away. It's just, he's playing a different game than 95% of people playing. Some of the names I listed off earlier, they're not on his level. Maybe probably no, because of his age, but certainly over the last 15 to 20 years, it's only Cristiano can stand up with him. But even last night, you know, the ball from Martinez for the goal, but the touch, the composure, it's just, it's a different, he's playing a different game, JD. He's just a remarkably talented footballer. And it's just, like, you look at Argentina, I know they weren't particularly great last night. You know, Cape Verde put it right up to them, obviously coming down into the last minute, scoring a set piece. But it's just the way that Argentina's kind of, they've built their squads around, it's all focused around Messi, and it's like everyone accepts their role within that. There's no egos. They know that he has the magic to unlock everyone. And if they're to go deep into this tournament, which I expect they will, all of them will have to be, you know, perform better than they certainly did last night, but get the most out of Messi, which is, you see him, he doesn't do much pressing. Even when I'm watching last night, Martinez is the one pressing, you know, from centre back to goalkeeper back to the six. Messi's just kind of hovering around, but they know the ability he has. He just makes things happen.
How are you consuming the World Cup, David Myler? Are you doing the crazy matches, or are you just drawing a line on, I've got to go to bed now at 1 or 2 a.m. here, I can't be watching Switzerland and Algeria at 4 a.m. in the morning?
It depends who's playing.
Yeah.
I'm going to say it depends on who's playing. Certainly all the bigger nations, your Spain, your France's, your Argentina's, Brazil, I'll watch all their games. They're the teams, you know, they've got the players, the magic that you want to watch. That's what it's all about. Like, you go back to previous World Cups, those you know, big countries having world-class players, which they have now. But I'm falling asleep more on the sofa, JD, than I am in bed, because I'm staying up trying to watch these games, and they're so late. That'd be one negative thing, but it's just the way where the World Cup is held.
Sure.
I completely get it, but no, I'm trying my best. And then what's beautiful is, like, my children are 10 and 7.
Oh, great.
Obviously, they go to bed at a reasonable time, but every morning they're up and we're on watching highlights of games, and then they're straight into me in the morning, who won? And then it's like, this game went to extra time and this game went to penalties. Can we watch them? Yeah, and we're getting them up, and then you get the short 10, 12 minute. It's brilliant. That's what it's all about. For me, it's heartbreaking, because obviously my kids, my wife's English, so they're Torrance kind of support in England. I'm like, Ireland need to get, you know, I need to get to a major tournament soon so I can take them, and then that will convert them fully.
Have they been wearing England jerseys?
No.
Okay.
No.
Yeah. Okay.
No, not yet.
Cork jerseys. Hopefully Cork jerseys ahead of today. Big one and a half three. Big one and a half three against Galway. So the Panini stickers, have they got a book? Have they got the wall chart and everything?
We've got, well, where do I start, JD? We started the sticker book. We finished that. We've completed that. For any mums or dads that are listening, if you get to a certain part in the book where you're struggling and you keep buying packs, just go on eBay and you can buy individual stickers. That's the best way to do it, I found. But we finished that. We have got a wall chart that we've put together. It's only just something the kids have made, where we write down the games and the times. We're actually building, we've built quite a few Lego pieces from the World Cup. I'm currently building the World Cup, but it's small little ones of Messi, Vinicius, Ronaldo, Mbappe. My daughter's built some of those. So we're full on World Cup fever. It's brilliant, though. I love it.
So do Lego specifically do World Cup figurines and World Cup, I suppose, constructions for the tournament?
Yes. They've got a full size. During one of the ad breaks, I'll go get it. I'm not finished. Sure, I'll show you what it is. It's massive.
Yeah,
so they have that. They have a football And then there's just small little ones that are like off players. What else is there? It's like there's another logo, kind of the World Cup logo. So there's all little things. Some of them aren't bad. If your kids are into it, they're like 20 sterling over here. So I don't know what, 25 to 28 euro. They're great. Keeps the kids occupied for a couple of hours. Keeps them off their iPads in between games when they're waiting.
Absolutely great stuff. Talking to David Myler, ex-Republic of Ireland international on the FIFA World Cup here on Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk. Do you think France are the best team so far that you've seen?
Yes. They're the full package. When you look at it, like their squad, like their front four are just absolutely frightening you when you've got, you know, Michael Olise, Kylian Mbappe, Desiree Doué, Ousmane Dembele, then they've got Barcola. Like, it's just the talent, you know, the Ryan Jerky, then their midfield of Tuamene, Rabiot. It's just, and it always seems to be, it's like the big players come to the big occasions. You look at Mbappe, it's just like it's almost like he's made for the World Cup. Like, I know he's now, is he one goal behind Messi in the all-time? He'll soon pass him in that. And then they'll be competing, obviously, then for the Golden Boot of this World Cup. But it's just remarkable to think, you know, that France group of players, what Deschamps has done with them to be keep, you know, competing. They just look like a different, they kind of almost look like they're in third gear. You know, if Morocco comes through their test against Canada, and then obviously France win tonight, like, I expect Morocco and France to be right ding-dong. I think Morocco could upset them, but there's a lot of if and buts there.
Yeah, they scored, what, at least three goals in every game they played so far, France, haven't they? And Real Madrid is a funny club, and there's a lot of talk about the stars there and everything, and Mbappe, whether it's there's a gel with the manager at times. But look, ultimately, he's not slacking because he looks so sharp. His preparation every day must be right on it. He must be taking it as seriously as he should be, because he is electric.
He is. And you see little snippets come on social media of training. And what's amazing is I know with stuff like that, they'll only release minimal stuff. But they all seem to be having fun and enjoying themselves. And no more than him. You see him when he's on the pitch, and, you know, the level of performances. I imagine a lot of Real Madrid fans are sitting at home thinking, like, where's this Mbappe for Real Madrid? But you hear different rumours that, you know, obviously with Alonso and then Arbeloa being managers, both try to coach a bit too much, whereas at Real Madrid, it's more about managing the egos and letting players play. And you see that Deschamps just gives them a free licence to, you know, drift and play. And then with the creativity players they have alongside him, it's inevitable. You've seen his goal the other day against Sweden, where Elise gets the ball, this little slip, and he's just ruthless in and around the box, and they are a real threat. And look, they should be favourites to win it, as long as they don't get, I suppose, arrogant or cocky and, you know, take anyone for granted.
Do you see any weaknesses in them, maybe defensively or in midfield or behind the front line that is so exceptional?
It's difficult. Like, I suppose fullback areas is always the one. You know, you've still got Upamecano. He's a hell of a defender. I suppose Luka Dinia is the one that you could probably target. But the beautiful thing of this France team, when you watch them, they dominate the ball so much that they can suffocate you, where teams end up in a back five or a back four with everyone behind the ball inside their own half. And it takes an awful lot to be able to spring out and counterattack. And France never step back. They step forward and they just suffocate. They play the entire game inside one half. So the distance is so short that when they lose the ball, they just transition quickly, and then they can just win it back, and they just suffocate you time after time. It's elite level football, and it's very difficult for any team that, you know, faces France.
I'm thinking about Morocco, and they've had such great success. They won the under-20 World Cup. They're the semi-finals of the World Cup 4 years ago, David. And would it be possible for Ireland to ever replicate Morocco's success? I'm thinking to myself, my worry is we want to aspire to be a really good European nation, and we beat Hungary, obviously, to get to the playoff against the Czechia, and there would have been another playoff if we'd beaten Czechia. We would have had Denmark. But I've looked at Sweden this week and Austria and Bosnia, and they haven't raised a gallop for me against better opposition. But how many coaches and contact hours, because you've been working in the Irish game, David, over the last while, would we need over, say, 20 years? Are we anywhere near being competitive and being a team that can get to World Cups without this support, which is, we're talking millions from the government, not just maybe academy funding that we're getting now in dribs and drabs, but we're talking a massive policy from the state. And there is the money there in this country, but is there the will? I mean, do we need just huge investment to build an industry here to have any chance of being a team at a World Cup ever again?
Well, I'm not, to start from your initial point, I'm not too familiar with Morocco's, say, underage development and how they brought these players up. Appreciate, like, you know, what they've done. It might just end up being a golden crop of generation for Morocco. I don't know that. When you talk about contact hours, big thing, and it's difficult for me in a way because I'm not too familiar with some European countries and how they work. I know they're not too dissimilar to England. I understand fully how England's academy system works. Like if you look at it, a lot of these boys, once they hit 16 in England, they go in full time. So they're in 5 days a week and they'll play a game on a weekend. That'll end up being double sessions on a Monday or Tuesday, depending on, you know, but you're looking at the bones of 3 hours on a Monday, another 90 minutes was 4.5, 90 minutes on a Thursday, 90 minutes on a Friday, and a game on a Saturday. So you're looking at a grand total of, say, 10 to 12 hours without really pushing it. That's just kind of the standard week. But that starts, JD, all the way down to, like, 7 and 8. Like, I know Hull's Academy train 3 times a week for 2 hours. That's 6 hours straight away. And then those boys are also probably playing with their own grassroots clubs. They're playing games. They're playing tournaments. Like my own son trains 3 times a week. And it's just, it's so difficult because I look at it and in Ireland, we have so many sports where, you know, certainly with the rugby, I know that's not the full country. Certainly in my own county in Cork, like there's a lot of lads end up going, but then we've got hurling, we've got Gaelic. There's a massive, you know, pull between sports. And then you see it at times where, you know, kids shouldn't play multiple sports. I know we've had that conversation on here before, but it's so difficult because, like, I've been in Cork, you know, obviously I was involved with Cork City for last year. We've, say, Killian Murphy, young boy who's doing exceptionally well for Cork. We're very fortunate Killian's in fourth year in school. Killian's been able to train every day. Now, we've other lads who've been doing their leaving cert, and they would be in training some days. They couldn't be because, you know, they're obviously preparing for their leaving cert. They've got exams. When exams came, they're doing the exams. And I'm fully on board of, like, kids getting their education, but it's finding a way that, like, in England, kind of after your junior cert over here to your GCSEs, then boys come in full time. I know there's a big push around Ireland now around these transition year courses. I know there's quite a few of them popping up all over Ireland. It'd be interesting to see the programs they're putting together. But certainly you'd have to change an entire model almost. Like it's a case of, like, how can we, I don't know, is it areas putting schools in areas where kids, like, I know Manchester City do it. They obviously partner with a school. The kids go in, train in the morning, go to school for the day, go straight to training. It's like, to be honest, JD, there's just so much entailed in it. And then it's so difficult. Like when I look at, you look at then, if you want to get to first team level, you're looking through the League of Ireland and the First Division, the facilities, the stadiums, the training grounds, all that. That needs to improve. Is it, like, there's a whole lot, and, like, you know, government obviously funding, bringing in directors of football and whatever. That's one step in the right direction. But now it's like, how do we evolve on from that and how do we build on that? Because it's going to, like, the good thing you said there is it's going to take like 20 years. It's going to take time. But at the same time, we're not a million miles away either from competing, you know, internationally. Obviously, we had the disappointment of Czechia, but we're not a million miles away. either.
Yeah, you're working with obviously some good underage players as well at Republic of Ireland level, because you've gone in now with Hull of the under-20s there, is it, or under-21s, David, and Hull are back in the Premier League now, so there's huge excitement. And I'd say the resource structure for Hull, for example, even the resources you have are probably quite good.
Yeah, no, they are. But look, obviously everything drip feeds towards the first team and catering for the first team. Obviously with the World Cup on, the first team aren't due back in for another week or 10 days or so. There's a great buzz around the place. Just if you look back at it, say 12 months ago before Hull were promoted, they stayed up in the last day in the championship on goal difference. And then obviously to go on, and just get promoted through the playoffs, which is probably the best way. And it's been remarkable. I imagine there'll be a lot of signings come in. Then it's just trying to help young lads progress up to the next level. That gap is now widened because Hull have gone into the Premier League, but that's the challenge. I remember back to my own time at Sunderland where lads had to push to break into, the Premier League team, and that's the challenge here for lads at Hull. You've got to be able to step up to that level, and if they aren't, can we help them have careers elsewhere?
0879-180-180, 0879-180-180 is the WhatsApp number if you want to get in touch with David Myler on our FIFA World Cup chat between now and 2:30 on the Saturday panel here on News Talk. And look, Manchester United, are they first coming to town? It'll bring you back to your days being a Premier League player at Hull.
No, it will. Jeez, it's a long time ago now, it feels like. Yeah, I think it's the 22nd of August, first games, 12:30 against United, which is brilliant. Whenever you're a newly promoted side, I think Coventry are playing Arsenal. I'm not sure who Ipswich are playing. But you're always looking out. It was the same when I was a player. You always look at the big clubs. Obviously, Liverpool. But it was Liverpool first, then United, Arsenal, Chelsea, City. When are we playing them? When are we going to their grounds? Whatever. So it's special. There'll be a good bounce around the place on the opening day. Imagine the stadium be sold out. It'll certainly be good.
Hopefully no hydration breaks though, David. You're a traditionalist, are you?
Yeah, no. The hydration breaks are frustrating. They're not, they're not, as much as we say they're hydration breaks, and they're tactical intervals for managers. You see the amount of teams now who are tweaking things, whatever, if you've set up with your game plan, it's not quite working. They're just tweaking things. It's a bit excessive. Even when I watched England, the game's raining. I know it's humid and that, whatever. But I was always told it had to be a certain temperature for there to be for a hydration break. But it's that Americanized way. It's almost the game is broken down into four quarters now. And I know there's been a lot of talk of the TV adverts or whatever, but I think the hydration breaks are a bit overkill.
Would you welcome that as a player, though, maybe at times when, we're not going so well here, we wouldn't mind a break and to reset? Or do you think, no, I've got to have the flow of the game. I prefer the flow.
It works both ways. You're right in what you're saying. If you're playing a game and you're under the pump and you're defending massively, you're just looking for something to break the play. Sometimes that's when, you win a foul up the pitch and one of the boys goes down for a minute or two to get treatment. I know they've changed the rulings on that now, but the hydration break can come at a good time when a team is really under pressure and they're defending for their lives. And then it's just, for the team then who are pushing hard, it can almost knock their flow. So it does work both ways. And you've seen that in the World Cup with certain teams when they've, even last night, I know there's been a lot of talk. If you look at, I think it's Messi, Scaloni and Martinez during the first hydration break. It's like, obviously, Cape Verde are sitting there with the back four to five in front, and they're making it really compact in and around the edge of the box. And it's like Messi's almost saying, no, like, put it in behind and I'll make a couple of runs, just play it. And then he scores not long after it. So, that's where the parts kind of come in with the hydration breaks. If they were to do it again, it's like the manager shouldn't be allowed, if they wanted to be just hydration breaks, then it should be just the sports scientist brings out a crate of water. But it's always a moment whenever there's an injury, if you're on the touchline, if there's a moment to get some information into a player, you'll try and do it. And certainly if you can help your team, then you'll do it.
This is Off the Ball Saturday News Talk, talking to David Myler, former Republic of Ireland international on the World Cup. We've got to take a break for news. We'll be with you with David very shortly. Kilkenny 10 points, Waterford 9. Kilkenny 10, Waterford 9 in the first of the All-Ireland Camogie quarterfinals. A 3:30 throw-in at Croke Park as well for the All-Ireland Senior Hurling semi-final between Cork and Galway. You want to WhatsApp us, please do 087 9180 180, 087 9180 180. Any observations or questions or comments or rants even about the FIFA World Cup. The big breaking news from a rugby perspective this afternoon is that Ireland have won. They've won the opening game in the Nations Championship against Australia, a tight one, 33 points to 31 in Sydney. We're back after the news. This is Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. It's John Duggan with the 3 to 5, the Saturday panel on Off the Ball this week, brought to you by Lynx, a proud sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 2026. Smell your best when you look your worst. Now we're continuing our chat with the former Republic of Ireland international and proud Corkman, David Myler, on the World Cup. Just before we get back into the beautiful game, David, have you been speaking to your dad? Is there confidence in the family about today against Galway?
Oh, there's always confidence, Shady. I don't talk much to him about hurling anymore since he took over that new job.
Yes.
He's leading the rules. So I've come with my own solutions to him and what I like. But it's so hard. Like I said to him, it's so difficult because hurling is such a fantastic watch, and it doesn't need a lot changing. That's the big thing. It's just a fantastic sport. Like even when you get people who've never seen it before, say like English people or whatever, they're just fascinated by it, and it's the speed of it and the electricity. So I'm hoping today, Cork will get the job done. It'll be a bit of a ding dong.
Talk about rules there. The snickometer. Did you see the snickometer for this goal that was disallowed for Croatia to equalise against Portugal?
I didn't see it.
Yeah, there was it was an offside that they said it. They had a little, you know, in cricket where they have the little the snickometer where they can just tell that there's been a touch, and they had it up there on the screen. So that's how technical VAR has got. But do you feel that the tournament, actually, in some ways, to be fair, they've sped up injuries and goalkeepers. So despite the hydration breaks, in other ways at times, it has felt that the game has been quickened up.
Yeah, well, the biggest thing for years with football has always been the ball is only in play on average like 40 minutes. So obviously with the throw-ins now, they've changed the ruling on that. Once the player, if he's deemed as time-wasting, they'll reverse the decision on the throw-in. And you often see if you watch closely, if anyone's taking a throw and the referee's counting him down. So they're trying to speed up the play. Obviously with goal kicks, the VAR, we've seen that, you know, over the last few seasons in the Premier League, sometimes the decisions take far too long. But like, when you have that level, what's the correct way to put it? You look at that decision the other night, I felt that Croatia scored a perfectly good goal. I know they had, what do you call it, JD?
The snickometer. No, I'm just making that up.
Snickometer. Yeah.
That's the thing they use in cricket.
I've seen that used in cricket, but obviously cricket have been using that for a long time. But it doesn't look like there's any touch. And then obviously it goes down where, you know, the Croatia have been eliminated from the World Cup based on, you know, a decision that might not have been, you know, correct. And that's tough and that's hard because it was an epic game.
It was. Where do you stand on Ronaldo? Has he been too ineffective in general play for you to help Portugal win this World Cup?
I think the big one, I know I touched on it, you know, it was massive for Martinez to take him off the other night. Because it's Cristiano, and I know there was the hiccups earlier on when João Neves made comments. But there's no doubt Cristiano's still Cristiano. He'll still score goals. Okay, people will go, like, he scored his, you know, his few against Uzbekistan and whatever. But in those moments, like, Ronaldo will still produce magic. He still has that ability. You know, you've seen that time in, time out, where he pops up with goals at the right times. Obviously, you're not going to get, you know, a lot of running from him out of possession. He's not going to be pressing here, there and everywhere. And I think that's down to the manager to utilize his players around him. I touched on earlier in the show about Messi. Like, Messi doesn't do an awful lot of pressing. and he conserves his energy, but everyone around him accepts that. And there is a way. Now, the Spain game is going to be interesting because Spain, I suspect, will dominate the ball.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how they use Ronaldo in that. But he still has so much to offer this Portuguese team. If an opportunity comes, there's no better player to have than Cristiano on the end of it.
You don't see him as a passenger in any way.
Don't get me wrong, JD. There's times when he is a passenger. I felt in the opening game, he was very selfish in his movement, and he's trying to score as opposed to like what's best for him instead of the team. But I wouldn't say like it's difficult. It's difficult to say someone of that ability who's done it for years and years. He's a passenger. I think they just need slightly tweaking on how they work, and you know, to get the best of Ronaldo, because he will score goals and he won't be around. I suspect this will probably be his last World Cup.
Yeah.
But you never know with him. He'll try and probably keep going.
Yeah.
But he has something to offer. You remember back, I know it's a few years ago when Spain played Portugal, I think it was in the Euros. They finished 3-3 and Ronaldo got a hat trick. There's still magic in him. And if you give him opportunities, he will score. He's done it since he was 18. He scored goals. He still is remarkable, but they just got to find a way to get the, you know, everyone else pulling in the same direction. And they might have to, you know, carry the water a bit longer than him.
Spain's midfield is just, we talk about France's attack, Spain's midfield is elite.
Oh, well, they've got, in my opinion, probably two of the best midfielders in the world with Pedri and Rodri. Like, to think of Pedri, like, he's just a joy to watch for any young aspiring football. Watch how he, you know, his first touch, how he manipulates the ball, how he escapes from pressure, he avoids it, his weight of pass, his distribution. And then you've got, you know, a Ballon d'Or winner alongside him, and Rodri, who's just the perfect little fit. And they're just typical, like, Pedri reminds me almost of Iniesta, the way he glides with the ball. I remember watching him closely when Newcastle played Barcelona in the Champions League, and he was exceptional. And the two of them are, you know, they're key to everything that Spain want to do. I know they've got Yamal, etc. But certainly with those two, they keep them ticking over. And they're always looking to hurt opponents. It's not safe, backwards or sideways passes. You know, they're threading balls through little gaps, and, you know, they're a joy to watch.
Be fair to Mikel Oyarzabal as well. He knows where the goal is. Look, he doesn't play for a top club, but he is fulfilling a role in an effective manner for Spain.
Yeah, but Spain have done that. You know, I've seen over the years where they'll... Oyarzabal, I hope I pronounced that right.
Oyarzabal, I think it's what it is.
But he's played predominantly throughout his career on the wing. But then when you look at... with the players Spain have in those areas, with Baena, Yamal, Nico Williams, whatever, that they've got no probably natural nine that they've had, you know, in previous years. But certainly he's contributed massively, and he just always seems to be in the right place at the right time. Excellent movement for a couple of his goals the other day. Like the one against Austria is a well-taken finish. But he's key to them, and he seems to be the one that's, you know, in those areas, and he's putting the ball in the back of the net. And you look at any team that has kind of gone on to do really well in the World Cup and have gone, they've always had someone who's been able to pop up with goals. So if they're to, you know, come through Portugal, obviously the midfield battle will be key, you know, but you need someone to put the ball in the back of the net too.
Yeah, there's an app called Forvo, which I always use for. I'm not getting any kind of kickback here, David Myler, for plugging them on the radio. But they have people in their own, the native language. So like somebody from Ireland saying, I don't know, Myler, be able to, and then they say the name. So you have somebody from Spain saying, I at the ball. So that's the way I try and get
you
around.
You need the twang. You need the twang. That's the one.
I'm not so sure if we've got the twang, but it's like all the Danish players. If you see a Danish player, folks out there, and it says guard, it's actually go. So it is right. Go. So Mikael Dam's go. It's not Mikael Dam's guard. It's just these are the small things that I'm kind of fastidious about, but not that they really matter. But anyway, there you go.
I never knew that.
Yeah, there you go. But he's got 17 goals in his last 17 international games for Spain, Mikael Oyarzabal, the 29-year-old. So what about England? discuss. I'm just going to say England discuss, David Myler, because you're living over there. You're like literally in the middle of the hype over in Hull.
About do you know what? There's not much. There's not much hype over here, JD. Right. There's a lot of frustration. There's a lot of frustration. A lot of concerned people. Like, I know we'll touch on it in a minute, but that Mexico game is going to be, you know, it's going to be extremely difficult. Mexico are a good outfit, and then you add in the Azteca, the conditions, the humidity, all that stuff, and the altitude. But England, in my opinion, have only really had one good 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Which is the second half against Croatia. You know, Ghana, they weren't great. Panama weren't great. But at the same time, they're in, you know, they're into the latter stages. They found a way to get through, and it's come down to, you know, Harry Kane. I think Bellingham's had a good tournament. But they need, like, Declan's been decent, but you can see with Declan, he's carrying a knock. Then there's a lot of chop and change in the wide areas. I don't think Thomas Tuchel knows his, you know, his best two wingers. You look at Rashford, yeah, decent enough performance, no end product, but then Gordon comes on, he's heavily involved in both goals. And then you've got Saka, who's obviously had a long, long season, looks like he's struggling. I think it's his Achilles. Then you've got the upset at right back. Who's going to go there? Obviously, then when Livramento pulled out, he decided to bring in Trevor Chalobah, which baffles me because you don't really need another centre-half. I don't know what it is, but I can't believe Trent's not there. Maybe is it a part that Trent didn't want to be a bit player? I don't know. See, Reece James is carrying Knox. But England, they're in the last 16. They have an extremely difficult game against Mexico, but they need to be better. Otherwise they'll get turned over by Mexico. And it'll be finger pointing and questions and drama over here.
Have you ever played at altitude?
I did a preseason tour in South Korea. And that was, we were told that was different, but I've never played in South America. But it's just, you see people who go and train at those, you know, for when they're competing in all different events or whatever, they go altitude training. Obviously it's a lot more difficult to breathe, et cetera. The big thing is Mexico seemed to swarm you in the first 25 minutes. And it's like, obviously with the Azteca, the fans, you know, Mexican fans are amazing. But it's going to be a baptism of fire for England, and one they need to be prepared for. I know there's even this talk now of changing kickoff. It's currently 1 a.m.
It's going to stick there. We believe it's going to stick to the original plan at 1 a.m. That's the current information we have.
Okay. Well, I knew there was just talks of that.
Yeah,
but like,
yeah.
Even so, like, I imagine the England hotel will have Mexican fans outside the night before, trying to any little thing to help their team. It's going to be a challenge, but England have the ambition to win the World Cup. And if you want to win it, you're going to have to get through these moments. You're going to have to grind out games, which they've done, albeit I don't think they've been particularly great. If it wasn't for Harry Kane, I think they'd be already on their way home.
Yeah. And when you look down, say if they navigate Mexico, as difficult as that might be, could be Brazil or Norway, Argentina or Colombia or Switzerland or Egypt. And then you're looking at France or Spain or Portugal or Morocco. Very hard to see them winning it.
Yeah, it is. But is it fair to say it's hard to see anyone beating France?
Like, Spain, maybe.
But it's still a maybe.
Yeah,
you don't look and go.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, even in that game, like, if Spain were to play France and Spain dominate the ball, they still have such firepower at the end of the pitch that you think, like, oh God. And if Spain are dominating possession, pushing up the pitch, you leave massive spaces. But going back to your initial one, like, that's the thing. If England get through this, you're saying there, Brazil, Norway. Brazil haven't been particularly great. You know, but they've found ways as well. Like, Vinicius has done well, scored some important goals. But that'll be a right ding-dong between Brazil and Norway. Obviously, Haaland, he's come to the forte. You know, he scored some big goals, important goals for Norway. And they're just riding that wave of emotion, and they're just, you know, kind of rolling game into game. I wouldn't be surprised to see an upset in that. I wouldn't be surprised to see Norway win.
Okay, it's Waterford 14 points, Kilkenny 14 points, a draw in the Camogie quarterfinal. This is Off the Ball Saturday News Talk, talking to the ex-Republic of Ireland international David Myler on the FIFA World Cup on our Saturday panel sponsored by Lynx. So why would you think there could be an upset for Norway? Is it Holland's form? Is it Brazil midfield? You're not so sure about their fullbacks? You're not so sure about?
I don't know. Like, I've watched Brazil-Scotland game, they kind of, you know, Scotland made errors and made it too easy for Brazil. But in other games I've watched them, I feel like they've struggled. I think when we think of, there's such love and, you know, appreciation for Brazil because of, I'm obviously not old enough, but, you know, Pelé's team, Garrincha, obviously those, the Brazil team that never won anything in 82, Socrates, etc. And then you kind of go then to kind of my generation of Brazil in 98, 02, like there's that, and people a little bit older than 94, that there's, you probably have Vinicius is the kind of big star for them. But when we look back and Ronaldinho, Ronaldo, Romario, the names are endless, and they don't have enough firepower. And I just feel that they're a good side, but they're not as good as the others. And I think eventually they'll come up short. And then you touched on Norway, just like what Norway are about. Like there's a country we can draw, you know, inspiration from. Obviously they've got Haaland, which is, you know, he's an exceptional goal scorer. His records are off the chart, even if you look at his international record. And he's just another one. If he's given opportunities, you know, he'll bully and beat up defenders, and, you know, he'll score. So with that, you always have a chance. When you've someone who's capable of putting the ball in the back net, you always give yourself a chance.
He comes across as a likable fella, Haaland. He seems to enjoy not only the game, obviously, and loves the game, but doesn't seem to be a person who carries the pressure heavily on his shoulders.
Yeah, and even, did you see the meme? The White Chicks, the film? The one with Terry Crews and what you call it, but it was somebody's obviously AI'd it, where it's Vinicius singing to Haaland. And even like this, that he pokes fun at it and saying, like, to Vinicius, we need to recreate this and all that. He just seems to be happy-go-lucky lad, knows what his strengths are, just seems totally relaxed, enjoys the big occasions. You see that. What's amazing with him is he can go through a half only touching the ball two or three times, but he still looks as clinical. Some other strikers I've played with or seen need to kind of be heavily involved in the game, where they almost go searching for the ball, they drop it, but he's not bothered. And we've seen that with Man City in the last 2 years. He's happy to occupy the two centre backs, stay away, and allow the others to bring the ball to him. And I don't need to keep repeating it, but his goal scoring ability is off the charts.
Yeah, he's as Owen Doyle on our show here, we call him an alien, in the best possible way.
I'm wrong.
Because you're watching a lot of clips, you're watching a lot of highlights, David. And you know, the way in the Premier League, we get obsessed about the players that join Liverpool or Manchester United, and we get to know them, and we get to know all about them. Like, say, for example, the Fab Three, Firmino and Mane and Salah and everything. There'll be players who will join Premier League clubs now in the close season, and could even join Hull City, for example, where you are. Are there players that have you've been surprised by, or new names that have come on your radar? You're going, wow, that's a talent.
It's been obviously when I spoke to you briefly yesterday, you're thinking of these lads and you're kind of going, the one that's really, I'll hang my hat in one that I've been really, really impressed with is Bouadi at Morocco. He's the midfielder.
18-year-old,
18. It's just, and I believe he was captain of France on the 21s. And then he wasn't selected, but he's been instrumental for Morocco. And then when it gets to know these like, last 16 games, and from Morocco, he's a massive part of them. And I suspect one of the big clubs will come sniffing around him very soon, because he's an exceptional talent, and, you know, the level of performances he's pumping out for an 18-year-old. It's quite staggering. And then the rest, you kind of look, you know, there's been some good performances from players, but a lot of it has come down to the big boys, big players in the world, and the elite ones we talk about all the time, they're all performing. And a lot of lads are just, you know, they've had really good tournaments, but certainly Bouadi's been one that I've been extremely impressed with.
and the importance as well of practicing penalties. I was looking at poor Australia last night, never fancied them against Egypt, to be honest. They put an 18-year-old kid in there to take one, and then you got the Netherlands missed three penalties, Germany missed a few, Jonathan Tass going over. Are you being a big advocate in your career about, look, we have to practice penalties, we, you know, if it ever comes across them? It might not have come your way many times in your club career, but it seems to be very important to get the technique right and give yourself the best possible chance.
But it's so difficult. You talk about practicing penalties. Should you practice them? Should you not? You can make arguments for both cases. Like, the hardest thing to do is replicate the pressure and the moment of walking from the halfway line up to the penalty spot when you're in one of these stadiums with 80, 85,000 people. That, you know, that, you know, whether you're taking first, second, third penalty, that, you know, inevitably you've got to score. Like, it's all good and well. I remember back in the Euros with Ireland in 16, every day after training, we practice penalties. But then I'd say to you, like, a lot of the time you can probably pick who the penalty takers are going to be for teams. You can probably guess three. But what happens if you're practicing the penalties the day before and, you know, the example used is Egypt. If Salah misses two or three of his practice penalties, then he's in his own head going, well, I went left yesterday three times and he saved it. Should I go the other way? And there's all different factors. A lot of it comes down to mental pressure. Can you deal with that moment? Because all these players, like, from all 48 teams, can strike a ball well, whether it's laces or side foot. It's just dealing with the pressure. That's the big thing. And how do you train that? Very difficult. I know a lot of these World Cup teams will have sports psychologists. It's easy to sit there and speak to someone about that matter. But when you're there, like, the ones who take probably the best penalties, Harry Kane's a great example. He has a process that he follows every time. And for people who don't take regular penalties, I was only having a conversation with someone the other day about it. Very interesting. When you put the ball down the spot, you initially wait for the referee's whistle. And you can see with natural penalty takers, they'll wait 3 or 4 seconds. And I know England did a massive study on this. But a penalty taker, once the whistle goes, you then have the opportunity to become in control of that moment, as opposed to when the referee blows. You don't have to run and take it straight away. And you've seen that with penalties that have been missed. It's almost, well, it's just want to take the penalty. But if you watch Harry Kane, he stops and waits a good 5-6 seconds. So he lets the keeper know, I'm in control of this situation. And there's all different things. Like, you look at Germany, I know Tam ended up missing the penalty, but there was talks of players didn't want to take penalties. I believe there's some news come out that Goretzka refused to take a penalty. I've seen lads in my own time, we had a League Cup against your old mob many years ago, Tottenham. We went, I don't know, did we get to like 9 or 10 penalties, and lads just did not want to take penalties because it's the pressure.
Did you take
it's
one,
very
David?
Hard to... I would, yeah, JT, I'd take a penalty. yeah, I loved the pressure. I've even then, we sat down yesterday to watch Australia v Egypt. Well, we got the end of it because I was watching Cork City v Cove. But it went to penalties, and Australia subbed the keeper. They brought Matt Ryan on for the penalties, and then Egypt brought on, can't remember his name, they brought someone on who took the first penalty for Egypt. And then even, like, is that the right thing to do? Is it, like, you remember years ago England brought on, was it Saka, Rashford and someone else to take penalties? Like, I've come on, I remember we played Leicester many years ago with Hull in the League Cup, and the manager said, anyone want to take a penalty? And I said, I'll take one. And I got subbed on in a game in the 118th minute, didn't touch the ball. I'm taking the fifth penalty, scored and we won. So it's, I definitely don't think it's a lottery. I think there's a lot of homework into it and understand. And the biggest thing is committing to what you're doing, commit to the way you're going and just follow it through. And if a keeper saves it, he saves it, but hit the target at least, please.
Yes, 0879 180 180, the WhatsApp number. Kane and Messi, too much diving when the opponents barely touch them, says Pat Shane, asking, why could we not have a, friendly with Cape Verde and get Pico Lopez lining out against the Republic of Ireland. Not the worst idea, I have to say, David.
Yeah. Like you look at the success Cape Verde have had in the four games. It'd be a massive turnout for it. Obviously, you know, Pico being from Crumlin and Dublin and being captain of Rovers, could be a great opportunity for Ireland to play that game.
Yeah.
Obviously, when do they play it? Because I imagine the fixtures will be already organised. And then before we know it, the European qualifiers will be coming around. It's always hard to kind of sandwich internationals in.
What about then your pick for the tournament? I mean, any dark horses apart from the ones we've mentioned? I mean, it looks like you're angling towards France to win this, David Myler.
No, my gut said Argentina at the start.
Right.
So I'm going to, my heart wants Argentina, but my head says France. How good would it be if we got another final like 4 years ago and the two boys are going at it again? That'd be remarkable, and they're obviously on opposite sides. So there is the possibility of that. But, you know, there's still Morocco. If both Morocco and France get through, Morocco will have a big say in that. They'll be very difficult to beat. They're a good team. Like Spain, I expect them to come through the Portugal game. Spain will have a say in that. On the other side, then you're kind of looking at England, Brazil. If they both come through, or Mexico, Brazil. You know, Norway, they're not going to go out easily. Then you've got a couple of others. So it'll be interesting. But once we get kind of core finals, I think it will start to shape nicely. And then we'll see, you know, which team is going to go and win it.
Haven't even mentioned the USA yet, David Myler. Pochettino.
I know. It must be hard for him because he took some stick after, you know, they got beaten by Turkey 3-2, didn't they?
Yeah.
And then they topped the group. It was almost job done, well done. But there was a lot of negativity around it. And then obviously they go and they perform against Bosnia and beat Bosnia. And then they've got Belgium, which I think they'll go and beat Belgium.
Yeah.
Belgium have been, oh, jeez.
The Senegal game was bonkers. It was bonkers.
It's hard watching them, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Like you look at, I love De Bruyne, what a player, but even he looks a bit off it. And then what a call from the manager the last day, taking Doku and De Bruyne off. And obviously they turn it around. I can't see them suddenly having a mentality shift to go on and go further and go deep in the tournament. Where's that game being played, against USA?
I can find out very quickly for you. Because they've been playing all their matches on the West Coast of America, the United States, and obviously Trump is staying away because he doesn't want to get booed. But it's in Seattle again. Yeah, it's on the Washington State. Tuesday, Irish time, 1 a.m. Tuesday, Irish time, English time, David Manor.
Yeah, and that's you look back at the history of the World Cup, a lot of the winners have been hosts. It's happened several times. I'm not saying USA are going to win. Do not ever say that. But I'm saying, with that home advantage, it makes it massive for them. And they've had a brilliant tournament, and I fully expect them to go on. They're in a good form. Great result against Bosnia. So I expect them to go and beat Belgium.
What's the reason for players skying penalties, asks Dylan Mees, David Myler?
A lot of the time when you... we'll get technical on it. A lot of the time when the ball flies up, I like to use the expression, don't watch your finish. Keep your head over the ball. Don't, when you strike a ball, look up. I feel like you can just... It goes back to my initial point on pressure in those moments, but lads are hitting the ball. I mean, Harry Suter went first for Australia yesterday. You've seen it. He opened his foot up and straight away looked up and the ball just rises away. It's just being confident and staying in the moment and staying over the ball. Whether that's a side foot or laces, just keep your head over the ball. Don't be looking up to see where it goes. You just see it. And it's fellas leaning back as well. Just poor technique in those moments, but that boils down to pressure. Because I imagine if you got every penalty taker that is missed to take a penalty the next day on the same keeper with no one watching, you probably score. But those are the hard moments. They're heartbreaking when a team loses on penalties, but it is what it is.
Just to finish, David Mitre, and thank you so much for coming on our Saturday panel here on Off the Ball on News Talk. Simon Cooper, who I love his books and I love his writing on soccer and other sports, he wrote Football Against the Enemy about 30 years ago, and he's written another book on the World Cup. But he had this, I've said this a couple of times on the radio, but I just think it's such a it's distilled all my thoughts about the World Cup and the way you're talking about your children there and consuming with Lego and world charts and stickers and really getting into the highlights. This is the quote: World Cups don't change the world. Normal service will resume the morning after the final, but the tournament allows people to inhabit an alternative reality for a month, and it models a better world than the one we live in. This is the biggest cultural moment in the world every 4 years. And it's just, it's great to see the colour and the joy on people's faces and the different cultures in the different countries. And a shame we're not there, but hopefully we'll be there again.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what it's all about. Like, you all have memories of Italia 90, USA 94. I vaguely remember USA 94 as a five-year-old. There's pictures in the house of me in a Ireland kit running around and a nappy and all that stuff. Like, it's special. And then you remember 02. 02 was probably, 98 was the first time I started to really pay attention, but Ireland weren't there. And then 02, like when, you know, you're rushing off from school to watch games or whatever. And that was special, and how well, you know, that group in 02 did. It's a shame that, you know, we're not at the World Cup, but you just see the joy and pride. We've touched enough, say, on Pico and Cape Verde. Like, you've seen what it means to Cape Verde. And, you know, you go back to 2016, obviously us getting to the last 16, getting beat by France. But what it did for the country, you know, obviously all the fans traveling. It's that's where it's the most unique sport. When your national team is doing well and they're, you know, qualifying for tournaments and they're having big moments, there's nothing better. And it's special. It's special for all young kids. I remember people saying to me that once these major tournaments kind of come round, your kids will start to fall in love. And like, even my son is asking me there a while ago before I jumped on with you, like, how many hours till the game kicks off? France Paraguay tonight, like, and they're just counting down the time, and it's, they want to watch the big boys. They want to watch all the games, and I love it. I love sitting there watching the highlights, you know, certainly if it's a late night kickoff, but you know, his mother's not too happy. Sometimes he's gone to bed at 11:30 and 11 o'clock, but comes around every 4 years, like you said. Please God, we'll be there at the next one.
David Mitre, thank you so much as always for chatting to us and Off the Ball here on News Talk on our Saturday show. And enjoy Cork Galway. May the best team win.
No, mate, Cork win. Oh, JD, I've got one thing for you.
Yeah.
I've got one thing. You were talking earlier at the top of the show when I was just waiting to join you about Lourdes and the pitch being
sloped.
Do you know why that is?
No, I do not know.
Okay, it's for drainage.
Oh.
Yeah, so I was only, just because I had the headphones on, I was ready to join you and I could hear you talking about it. But it's a lot of goal mouths in football have little curves by the goal so they can brush the water off to protect the penalty areas. So I imagine in cricket it's to get the water out towards the boundary. There you go.
David, I will take that now and I will use that as my own fact and my own stash for people now going forward, having you tell me on the radio. So thank you so much. I'm going to take that as armory and I'll speak soon to you. David Mitre, thanks so much, man.
JD.
Take care.
See you later. Bye-bye.
This is Off the Ball Saturday News Talk. Don't forget, Football Saturday between 3 and 5. Continue your contributions because we're getting lots of them on the World Cup to 0879 180 180 here on WhatsApp. We're going to have to go off to Croke Park to get the whole preview now from Tommy Welsh and Tommy Rooney on Cork versus Galway. We're going to do that after this.
The Saturday panel on Off the Ball
with Lynx, a proud sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 2026.
This is News Talk.